once you have a feel for the difference between men and women, which Matt will have to pick up something as we go along. So, some practical things, not that we said that wasn't practical, but and more targeted, as opposed to the Hashkafah Shabbat and more the practical Shabbat. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first step is that, like we said way back when we said we saw the whole thing, this whole thing works only if you're willing to work. Willing to work means a person understands part of the difference between a child and an adult is the difference is the adult understands that he has there's consequences to decisions and his responsibilities and his commitments. That person, Rabbi Vitzimelis himself says in one of his tapes about marriage, one of his favorite things is he likes to knock romantic love. I think this is in Shagas of America, which it is, by the way. And I'll prove it to you. But, so he says, if you're walking down Ocean Parkway and you see this elderly Italian couple, and he weighs 300 pounds, and she weighs 300 pounds, he says, is there romance there? There's no romance there, but there is loyalty. And that's from the Kuda that he says, he puts in the person understands that what you're going into marriage, it's a decision, you're there. You're there for each other. That is the Yisrael which is going to create a foundation. And that being there for each other means without waiting for the other person to get back. You're there. You don't keep a cheshbon or a tit for a tat. So, you know, you hear from Rabbi Vitzimelis, it's you say, you know, statements he's going to say, you know, he's a bishop, you know, he's a godel, etc. I saw an article written by a professor of psychology from Harvard, okay, who's a secular Israeli, and it's about relationships, etc. And this person says, you know, that would you picture this idea of Hollywood love doesn't exist in real life. Real life is about working, in marriage, like his whole, like this, wow, he could have said this in yeshiva, you know, love is like yeshiva, she's tickle fair. Very nice article, I have a copy, and I saw it. Goshen sometimes sends you a bracha. I got on some mailing list of some Jewish organization which sends out a monthly publication. It's like, what do I do with it? You know, most of the stuff is like total drivel, you know. But this article looked fascinating. I think it's a really good article. It was really on target. So now I can base, not only is it even true because the secular person said it also. See, you don't believe the rabbi, believe the secular person you believe. Anyway. So, how much word for word out of Miller's tapes. Okay. Person gets married. Step number one you have to understand is that you're going to have things that you're going to have challenges. Accept that up front. That's normal. And you're going to make mistakes. It's also normal. Sometimes you're going to be upset at yourself that you made such a stupid mistake, but that's also normal. I was married about 5 years and I made a really stupid mistake. I still said it myself. And I went to discuss with my Rebbe. This is very cute. So I told him what I did wrong, and you know, why I'm upset, you know. I said, I thought I should make such a mistake. I'm very proud of Israel. I should have stopped it, you know, etc. So he says to the Rebbe, yo, says, I'm married 25 years, and I still make stupid mistakes. So, yeah, what to look forward to, guys? I can just tell you that I'm almost married 25 years and I still make stupid mistakes. I hit my milestone, you know. It's his anniversary of this year, so. Yes. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to make more mistakes now than I made earlier. Okay, so you know that. You accept that up front. Next step is understand there's going to be issues in marriage which are going to bother you. You don't know if it's going to bother me, I'm going to be upset, doesn't it bother you? Things get, you know, the joke, you know, a couple comes to the Rav, they want to get a get, you know. The Rav says, like, you know, what? He says, it's not, right, we're not compatible. She's not in the game. Just don't try to commit to it. It's not in the game. What? You know, it's not in the game. what? Sogmund, okay, I'll tell you. It says, you know, the issue is very simple. It says, right? It says, one of us is a roller, one of us is a squeezer. What's wrong with that? Chris explained it to me. He says, you know, you have toothpaste. You know, there's two ways to get the toothpaste out of the tube. Some people roll it up very neat, etc. Some people just give it a... I'm a roller and she's a squeezer. It's all over. Gather the money. That's a joke, though. Right? I have to tell you, sometimes people come to me, the things they come to me about are not so much more intelligent than that. What's the chat? The guy found on the sugar? The joke is a joke, I'm saying, but the point I'm saying is, the revolver writes in one place, Vivaldi says, we have things which get on our nerves. But we're intelligent enough to know that if we admit that, we look like absolute fools. But they still get on our nerves. That's the nature of people. The nature of people is not that, you know, if I'm big enough to move away from those things. The reality is I have hakodesh. I have things, you know, there's certain things, they just rub me the wrong way. You know, I once saw it in Dale Carnegie, one of the Dale Carnegie books. He has a story over there. I love the story. It's about a fellow who went on a scientific expedition to Antarctica. So they have these underground laboratories where they work during the winter, because in winter, you arrive in the summer, in the summertime, you get in, and you hunker down for 8 months, you're stuck there. With the 20, 30 guys that you're there with, that is it, that's who you're with. You're going to see the same people for the next 8 months, and that's it. Right? So he sits down, you know, they're all scientists, so they all have their quirks, you know. So he sits down, and the guy crosses him is in one of into the importance of digestion, which is facilitated by chewing things a lot of times. So it chews it, and then it mixes with the saliva. So he chews every bite 40 times before he swallows it. So this guy sitting across from him is telling him that fellow chews every bite 40 times. So, you know, the first day, it bothered him a little bit, you know. Just like, you know. Second day bothered him more. He's writing this thing, he's describing how about it, you know, towards 6 months in, ready, he pushed it, he was holding my receipt. He was ready to take a knife and stab the guy. It's Mishigas, right? The guy had a Mishigas, he knew secrecy. What gate they're on? So the guy chose. Do Mr. Mishigas also, you know, it's a gate they're on, you know, move on in your life, you know. No, but the nature of people, that certain things get on earth, right? So you think, because you're not going to have those things happen in marriage. Of course it's going to happen in marriage. So what do? You have to put them in perspective. At any point in time, you put them in perspective. There's many different ways of dealing with it. And there's no specific order, and none of them will work at all the time. One of them is humor. You have to learn not to take yourself so seriously. That's number one. What it said is, me, the cluster of a guy, you know, I expect the things to go a certain way, and then it go a certain way, you know, it's a bother to me, you know. The whole set of all of humor is recognizing the element which is beyond the way it's supposed to be. The fact of the sun is the brakes cut something down. That's all. The whole humor is take something which is too big and cut it down to size. That's the power of humor. And that applies to ourselves also. When you laugh at yourself, what you're saying is, you know, I expected me with all my, I have a right to have things go my way, etc. You know what? I knew me, that, you know, I thought I was somebody's hush, I'm not so hush. I'll give you a cute story. And it's a phenomenal thing to literally to laugh at yourself and to not take yourself too seriously. I use it every once in a while. To put a twist in something in a humorous way, visiting yourself, but I had once a discussion with my son. He was 6 years old and 5 years old. I don't know, something like that, you know, like, you know. And he was doing something during davening, which I really felt was improper. And, you know, he was, yeah, right by the age which he could not do that. And I didn't want him doing it. I don't know what it was anymore. And I sat down with him and I explained to him why, you know, the car and davening, you know, the whole thing. And I very strongly told him, good. Next davening, I started Shemoneh Esrei, and next thing I know, he's doing Now, if you want something to really destroy your shemanesra, that's it. You know, you just gave it to a major thing, and you know, and then you really believe, like, wow, you've taken care of the problem, and you're such a hush of a guy, and you can take care of things, and you make your five-year-old son do what you want, and he just basically went, boom, to you. It's like, you know. So, like, the first response is, like, I couldn't focus on my davening. I started laughing. You know, I really thought it was hush that I could get a five-year-old to listen to me. I'm so not hush, even a five-year-old doesn't listen to me. If I was a drunk on me, I giggled. I must have started giggling. The Lishman has, you know, and it diffused. The tension was gone. So, you know, fine, my thing gone. You know, I'm the fool. Move on with life. I laughed and I was able to dominate. That's my dominant. I once had a mice with some bachur in the yeshiva. I got up and spoke to some bachur about this thing, and I'm very stark. You know, it totally ignored me. Totally ignored me. It's like, you know, it's maybe in their mind they felt that, you know, whatever, you know, that their rationalization is at their business. As far as I was concerned, I was totally ignored, you know. So, you know, if it's safe, you know, I'm the rabbi of the town, but all those different things. I said to myself, Rangel, what do you want? Because Baruch, since you're a good company, because Baruch, they ignore Kodesh Baruch also. He says, and they don't listen to him. Like, so what do you want? So good, you're a good company. I could have twisted it, which was, you know, made it a joke. I moved on with life, you know. A lot of these things, the AT is be able to laugh. It's a phenomenal thing. Okay. Number two. Again, no specific order. We spoke about this idea of putting things in perspective. So I tell you the story. I'll tell it again. That Rick Fran, the Rick Fromm, one of the first one. You know, says over the name of the other one. They heard the story. There was a husband and wife. The husband was a type A personality. The wife was definitely not a type A personality, very laid back. The husband was very intense. Mm-hmm. And every single time, you know, he got little things, the wife would say, Zebel Chushu. It's not so important. It's, you know, will you chill out, please? And we got him real upset. And so the Yom, they live in New York, so they do the summer ritual, which people love in New York City, of the mountains, which basically means that the family goes up to the mountains for the summer, and the husband commutes back into the city for the week and comes back for the weekend for Shabbos. He comes back to the mountains. Okay, so he comes up in the mountains, Shabbos, he walks in, and there on the crib, baby's crib, she sees it hanging. The wife has her purse with her wallet and her checkbook and her credit cards, and the whole thing looks all over. On the baby's, hanging on the baby's crib. So how you talking? You should leave someone on the baby's crib, you know, it's mostly, it's not right. Listen, you know, chill out. Good. So that was his introduction to, you know, to Shabbos. He comes in, he's a little upset, but okay. Goes back, weekday he goes back, and wife was expecting, he gets a phone call in the middle of the week that his wife is having complications in the pregnancy, and they're taking her to the hospital. He should come up as quickly as possible. So he leaves work, he tries up. By the time he gets there to the mountains, to the hospital, so I just passed away. So he deals with all the arrangements he's still with, and he goes back to the bungalow, and he walks in, and the purse is hanging on the strip. So he says, you know what, Taka wasn't so harsh. Yeah. If you put things in perspective, it's ridiculous. The things that we get upset about them are actually ridiculous. You have to put it in perspective. Like, what really is it really that important? This is the person which is the most important, the most important person to me in my life. She has many mileage and many things that are good. Is it really? Should I really be focusing on these things? We spoke about the 80-20. That nothing is perfect. You understand by definition, you're not getting a perfect. Nobody's perfect. You're not perfect. She's not perfect. 80 is the best you get. 80% is the best. If you go in, if you're cutting 80%, you can get more than 80%. You're ecstatic. You go in, cutting 100%, you say that. So Teres is mehechatesi. You just said 100%. It's just not. Then most of these things are just not worth it. Chavetz Chaim, a third idea. Chavetz Chaim talks about. He calls Shalom Geld. He says, the same way we're willing to spend money on a mitzvah, he says, Shalom is an important mitzvah, so we're willing to spend money on Shalom. He says, most of the six luchim which go on between people are about minimal amounts of money. So the person doesn't, at the end of the year, that he's willing to spend X amount of money, his main shalom, so he would never get upset. He says, that's part of my money, my shalom guilt. He says, he's talking about that in the context of between two, you know, people, not a husband and a wife. Same thing is true between a husband and a wife. If a person designates up front that a certain amount of aggravation, time, etc., I'm willing to spend for shalom. I'm expecting that. That's shalom is worth it. So I'm willing to spend. So she went to the store and she spent X amount of money extra. She, you know, she doesn't. I had a fellow come to me. His wife's not a good shopper. He's very on the ball type of guy, etc. He knows where to get the bargains. He knows everything. The guy's a global hobby. And his wife's not like that, you know. And she's not a good shopper. So he pointed out, she got a little bit upset, and insulted, you know, good, how's she doing? So I asked him, do you want to do the shopping? He said, no. He said, do you want to have a wife who's crushed and dependent on you? He said, no. I said, what's your choice? Your choice is, you look at your wife and look at her marvelous and say she's a great, and she's not such a good shopper, but listen, that you accept it up front. Or you could say, you're not going to accept that. You're going to focus in on that detail. And you'll crush your wife. That's great. She'll become dependent on you and you'll be very happy. It's your choice. He didn't like the choice. He wasn't so excited about the way he presented it. It's like, if you think about it, it's like, what's your question? Like, what's the harm? It's like obvious. And at the end of the day, how much are you going to gain because of it? You know, what's enough to mean in dollars and cents that you're talking about? How much money are you talking about in dollars and cents? So she didn't get the tomatoes that had a room. She got them at McGruber's. So they cost an extra 20 cents per pound. Okay, good. You know, I mean, I don't want to make some sums out of it. Once a person that once told me, says, he knows a certain fellow. This fellow knows. He has Oscar Heschman, the cheapest gas station between Cleveland and New York. He knows exactly where the cheapest gas stations are. And he always sessions us whenever he's traveling. He'll make sure that he makes it to that, has enough gas to make sure he gets to that one. He'll fill up there's a certain temple kind of that, to that also, you know. Obviously, you know, you don't stop and waste money, but you can't live your life around the extra 20 cents. You know, Noftamina is 20 cents per gallon, right? So you fill up your car, Noftamina is $4. Okay, but it's $4, it's five times a year, so it's $20. You know, you put it like that, it's like, I'm going to make my wife, you went to that one, not to the other gas station across the street, you know, like you know, the Nakamina, yeah, it's 3 cents per gallon, times 16 gallons, okay, do the math, please, 48 cents. But I heard people get upset about that. It's like you didn't notice. It's cheaper over there. Like, you know, so I didn't notice. So, you know what? So I'm not the perfect, most perfect. I didn't notice. I didn't notice. You know, okay. So you put it, shalom guilt is a wonderful thing. The next one I use is, I call it rotanesh. So, you know, I'm here in this world to do what a perfect one. So I asked myself, does the Baruch Hu want me to get upset at this person, the Rambam says, for such a small thing? And he says, no. Okay. So then, and why am I doing it? The person doesn't want me to do it. Why am I doing it? Then I take it a step further. I say, you know, Baruch Hu may have asked him, I'm going to send the Bezen Shemawa. And they're going to have the Persian and all of the Malachim and all of the Tiber watching me. And they say, did you ever get upset at your wife or you have a chiyuv of Peter Rambam to be mechaber yes and gufa? Yes, I did. It says, for what? And they're going to laugh me out of court. They're going to laugh me out of court. I mean, totally laugh you out of court. For that, you another human being and your wife must have seen, you didn't, they're going to laugh you out of court. So I picture that picture of being laughed out of court. Believe me, you lose any cheshik. It sounds like a film. It's not a film question was over here. Like, you just picture yourself, you know, you picture in the court down here, and just picture it. I'm telling you, once you can picture in your mind that picture, you lose any patience to get upset about these stupid things. Because it's so embarrassing, if you think about it, that I so allow those things to get to myself. I am not saying that you should not respond if it bothers you. That's not what I'm saying. Because if you do that, what happens is it builds up. And one time you don't say anything, even what bothers you. And the second time, the third time, and something else. And then one day, just, you know what happens? It explodes. Over some kleinigkeit, and she looks at me like, you're stomping on the sugar. Like, you know, why are you getting so upset about this little thing? And you're telling me, I'm not even sure why you're getting so upset. But it's all built up inside of you. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, you put it in perspective, and you say, it just doesn't bother you anymore. It's not important. You need to put it into this. My point is, various ways of putting it into perspective. Okay. Okay. The next, that's one issue. Next issue is, which is the follow of the decision of life, is the good of Simcha. There's the people which are the half full people, the people which are the half empty people. People which are half empty people, I think the people which are half full are not realistic. I had a friend of mine in Yeshiva, which, you know, a hymn of Murphy's Law was like, that was the rule of life. He had all the Murphy's Law signs up in his room in Yeshiva. Like, the light at the end of the tunnel is the light of the oncoming train. You know, that type of stuff. And he used to think I was like this totally, like, sugar and rose, you know, rose-colored, unrealistic optimism, sugar. You know, he probably thought I was like off the wall. But I just say to him, listen, you know, what can I tell you, but there's been studies done that people who are optimists have healthier lives. They have less pressure on their nervous system. You know, it'll work out, it's okay, it'll work out, you know. A person who can focus on the fact of being happy, on what you do have, on the skills that you have, etc., creates an atmosphere in the home which is conducive to relationship and conducive to raising children. Children need to be raised in a home which is happy. They feel it's a comfortable place to be. It's a safe place to be. One of the most important things people need in a home, you know, to find a home. A home is a safe place. And you go out to the world, and wherever you are, there's people out there which are out to get you, and you have to be on your guard and careful and this and that. A home, first of all, to find a home is a safe place. You come there, you know everything is good. Now, half of it is going to be made by you, or maybe more than half is going to be made by you. And then, probably to Yisrael Olden, the Ulovimen, because I'll say the Olden is referring to Ishtar. So the responsibility of making the marriage work is the husband, not the wife. So you're going to have to make that decision. You're going to make it work. You know, you want to have a place where you feel comfortable coming home to, your wife becomes comfortable coming home to, the kids feel comfortable coming home to. And, you know, and a lot of that is by learning to focus on the positive, the 80%, which is there, as opposed to the negative. One of the biggest challenges that we have to that next step is, why do we have problems with simple? Is the Volber writes a fascinating thing. He writes that Shalom Bayis is your first real challenge in Bitachon. And that's, if I would ask you to guess what area do you think that Shalom Bayis is a challenge in, you would not have chosen Bitachon. I'll explain what he means. It's a fascinating insight. The opposite of bitachon is a person who believes he's in control of his own life. And a bacher, for the most part, lives a life like that. He basically makes his life out of his bacherhood, barring the person has a major illness or something like that. You know, a bacherhood will be what he wants it to be. He's in control of how he learns, who he learns with, you know, where yeshiva he goes to. Basically, he's in control of his life. Here's the first time in life you realize you're not in control anymore. There's somebody which you cannot control. And there's circumstances which you cannot control. There's a reality of life. As much as you want to control, a person would want to control his wife or control his children, it doesn't work. I had two sets of parents speaking recently about, you know, they have X other kids doing fine, and one kid where the kid will not want their own independence, and they're pushing back. Both of those couples, one of the members of the couples is very strong control. And both of them have said to me, the parents, I don't have a place to live at home anymore. I tense up when I go home, the parents. Because it's not a safe place for me anymore. Because I know it's going to be a battle between me and myself and my kid. What is he saying? For me to be comfortable, I feel I have to be in control. And I'm not in control anymore. And I'm not comfortable with that. It mama drives me crazy. One of the couples is him, one of the couples is her, but that Nakuda. Marriage is the first time you as much as you push, you're not really in control. So who is in control? Because the world is in control. That's the first time you accept the fact, the reality, that you are not in control of your life. And somebody forces you to say, you know, Russians, I'm giving you, deal with it, folks, take what I have and try and live with the reality that you are put in and make the best of it. And that's your job. That's a whole new system of living. And the biggest change from bokerhood to marriage is this. It's you're not in control of your life anymore. And you will not be in control of your life for the next 30 years. After you get married. At least. You know? Besides, eventually by the time you're in your marriage, after years, your wife settles and says, whatever you do, she'll live with her. But the kids, the kids won't, So first, next 30 years, you're going to come with kids, at least. So, and even the wives, sometimes they push back even after 50 years. This is it. It's a move up in life. So how do you deal with that? So we've always talked about the Nakuda, where a person understands that, it's not, we're functioning as one. You can talk about it, and it's a fascinating thing, and it's, people can talk about it intellectually, to understand what that means, that this person is, we become one entity, we become one together. You will not know what it means to you experience it. Person goes into the, way back when the first thing we said when we started this whole thing was what is marriage? We said marriage is an opportunity to become a giver, not a getter. The person who is able to focus on being a giver, not a getter, will be able to expand that the feelings of his wife are his feelings. The concerns of his wife are his concerns. The concerns of his children are his concerns. The feelings of them are, he'll become very aware of them, very aware of the realities. And that person expands, they become a bigger person. They become a person who is not only focused on aware of themselves, they're aware of other people. They're a bigger person, they're a better person. Some people don't. Like I told you the story last week about the Yaakov Horowitz said about, he asked the father who came to him and said, what's your son's favorite soda? He says, I have no idea what my son's favorite soda is. He says, what's your son's favorite food? I said, I don't know. Now, they've been living under the same house together and he's a father and he cares about his son. He has no idea what his son's life is like. He's not aware of his son's life. So that idea of attention was it being aware, really aware of what's going on with somebody else is a major shifting of the focus of a person. And a person does that, in the mail, you work together. Okay. There's a machshava, which I heard from Moshe Eisman, from Shlita, from the Mashkech HaNeyusel, which I think is a fascinating machshava. He types up in Matzeh Ve'Alech HaYakov. I wish I used the word fascinating a lot. Keep track of it as I use it. Because I'll say that in Pisei Olam Mukhulanim Zekeneged Zeh. So she talked about this last week a little bit. This idea of you don't know what's going on in somebody else's tent. The issue here is not sneers. Not only sneers does not only mean I'm not. I want to know somebody else's private business. Pratnius means, you understand that you don't really know somebody else's private business. It's on your business. I don't know what's going on in somebody else's tent, you know. So in my tent, right, imagine a guy in the midway, you know, they have to, you know, just in his tent, flush it, his wife was, you know, there's leftover money all over the place, you know, every day, there's leftover money all over the place. And the kids, you know, they're running around, you know, in the diapers, you know, and it was the shremaisa, you know. And his wife couldn't get things done, etc. The next tent over, a lady, pushed them, you know, she was always wearing jewelry, she was put together, the kids were put together, the house was immaculate, it was great, you know. So, why can't my wife just be more like? Right. See, he doesn't want to think that. He doesn't want to think that negative about his wife. But the mindset, he knows, I wonder sometimes, like, you know, what's the difference? What's the pshat? The answer, you don't know what's going on in the tent. You know, it might look very nice and sweet and wonderful from the outside, but you don't know what's going on inside. You know, the amount of whatever issues they have going on. Everybody has issues. Well, that's what they do. People come, you know, and they're all, you know, they put on a facade, visit everybody else, everything's going great, it's wonderful, etc. But, you know, deep down, they have issues. So, everybody else's facade is real. My facade is a facade. You know, them, it's not that it's really going fine. But me, it's just, you know, everybody has issues that they're working on. They have, you know, these things they have to balance out. Some of them more, some of them less, but some of them, well, they know the things that thrust in them, you know. So I have one couple come to me, so they have, after marriage, they found out that the wife is anorexic. And that's not a schmuck, I think, they found out to get married or something. Right? One fellow comes to me that he found his wife had OCD. You know? And he was told beforehand, but he's told it was under control, it wasn't under control, you know. So imagine the guy with, you know, OCD, but the guy, you know, doesn't know what's going on with the other one, and he doesn't know what the other one, you know. He says, wow, their marriage seems to be going very, they're very nice, you know. Meanwhile, he's battling with that, isn't he? They're doing very nice, you know. And then the third one's coming to me with something else. The third couple's coming to me with, I mean, give me a person came to me with a problem. Says, you know, his life is too frum. I said, you know, somehow, like, he doesn't really fit in with, like, some of his friends' wives. Says, for the most part, you know, she benches very long. And it really gets in his mind, like, why can't you bench faster? So I asked him, like, you know, can your ears just hear what your mouth just said, please? You know, is that really an issue that's bothering you? You know, your wife benches slowly. So what people think that she's strange is, you know what, don't look at your wife with somebody else's glasses. Look at your wife with your glasses. And that's a real issue. We appropriate the world's glasses to look at our family. I had a maisa, and you know, someone was sort of blowing it. I think maybe this pack was a maisa which I blew, but maybe this is a maisa. Maybe. Not it was a business thing that blew it. I'm not embarrassed to say the maisa, but I'll say the maisa. My wife, Roxanne, was a very good cook and a very good baker. You haven't noticed yet, right? You know, and I have a certain amount of pride in my wife's culinary expertise, right? So the state says, you know, people come, I'm proud of my wife's ability. So one time, you know, whatever, you know, she made the call, didn't come out so good. So I wanted the people to realize that, you know, the call that she made, they shouldn't think that how she makes salad normally. Her salad normally is much better. They shouldn't have a low opinion of my wife's salad. I don't know exactly what I said. Basically, it was something to the fact that usually the salad is better. My wife came and just looked. I just embarrassed her publicly by saying it wasn't so good. Usually it's better. Here I was trying to, you know, protect her honor, and I insulted her publicly. Everyone said, that was kind of stupid, you know? That was pretty stupid. Like, what were they thinking? You know, afterwards, like, you know, it's like, that was stupid to say. But, like, great, you know? And I remember, like, the motivation was, I wasn't focused on my wife's feeling, you know, she also saw the challah wasn't as good as usual. Right? So what was her feeling? How was she? So the correct response is, you know, wow, great challah. I really like it a lot. So the people there think I'm a mishugah, no? If they can, that's great quality. We know quality can taste much better than that, you know, and they'll never come back again. That's their problem. It's not my problem. My time, my wife's so good, you know. But I wasn't focusing on her, I was focusing on how the people are perceiving her, and I was trying to look at her based on it, and I was trying to respond to it, and that was a stupid thing to do. You know, I know my wife's abilities, you know. Nobody's going to have a 100% perfect record. That's reality, you know. So, accept it up front. Well, I'm a lifer, don't worry about how people, you know. But never appropriate someone else's glasses, vis-a-vis yourself or vis-a-vis your family. Because then it's very negative when you're dealing with children. So the kid is having, kids are very good at this, you know. So they'll have a temper tantrum in the middle of the recruiters, you know. Not in the house, you know. So, you know, you need to focus on right now what is the best thing to do with this child. There's acting on the people looking at you, thinking all these evil thoughts about them. You know, like, terrible parents, terrible kid. You know, this kid, I know why, because he yells at his kid. There must be, you know, he yells at his kid so much. You know, all these other things, like, they're irrelevant. They are totally irrelevant to your life. You have to sit and focus on what is the best thing to do with the child right now. If it's to be strong, you're strong. If it's to be weak, whatever it is. And there's going to be acting on people which are going to misjudge you, whatever. So, there's no problem with life. Furthermore, and this is, I had a maestro here once, and there was a buffer here in the yeshiva who, he came in with a little, a chip in his shoulder. Against the yeshiva world, it's not yeshivas over here, but, you know, for him that was called the yeshiva world, you know, he'd been exposed. But other places, he came with a chip in his shoulder in a real way. So, after being here for a little while, he decided, you know, that Rav Aaron's a good guy and Rav Aaron's a bad guy, because I used to be the unofficial Mashiach, and I used to sometimes tell people, you know. So he decided that I don't like it. And then he responded in kind to that. So one day I went over to him, you know, and said to him, you know, so-and-so, I said, you know, wait. He says, I see that you think I don't like you. I said, I see that you think that, you know, he says, yeah, I said, I don't want to burst your bubble, but you're not close enough in my life, I spent time thinking about you. You know, he thought every time I was looking at him during davening, I was thinking something about him. I wasn't. And I told him that. I said, you think every time I'm looking at you, I said, I'm not thinking about you. He said, really? I said, yes. Not positive negative. You're not my focus in my life to think about why I don't like you. And after that, our relationship, you know, it broke the ice and had a great relationship. But I'm telling you, the guy walked down and he had such a chip on his shoulder, like he was busy. Most people spend 90% of the time thinking about themselves and not you. So when you're standing in the store and the person's thinking that bad thought about you, you know what? A minute later, it's gone. They're not thinking about you. They don't spend the time thinking about you. So we're so worried about what people think about us when people aren't thinking about us. People think about themselves. And it's such a... I mean, look... You know, good. You know, it's something more caustic and more cynical, and like the cops is a good thing, and say a line about it. The fact is, you know, they spend the whole day thinking about, wow, that guy was really stupid. You know, they go home and say, you know, wow, that guy's such a stupid guy. And you know, he spends the whole day thinking about that. Come on, he doesn't. You know, unless he's a columnist for a newspaper, he has to write something intelligent. You know, he has to come up with columns about these types of things. Well, you are not important enough to them to think about you. Period. You know, so if you keep that in perspective, you're not gonna worry about their glasses because they don't have glasses on. They're not looking at you. Okay, what time? Okay, I'll see what time it is. 11:23. Okay, just one more thought. You're right, I'm wrong, I'm sorry. You know, it's a famous piece. The six most important words in a marriage. I once heard from Talmud Chacham, he spoke under the chuppah by a chasm. So he said, there's a reason why, you know, the many of the mishalim of marriage are Klai Yisrael, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, not Torah, Luchas, etc. The Luchas which lasted were the Luchas which came down Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur was the day the Russian said, I forgive you. The relationship is only built on the fact that the person is able to forgive. If you can't, you can't have a relationship. And that's why the relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu was a relationship which is built through Yom Kippur, through the Luchos Shniyos of Yom Kippur, which are based on the Chiyuv. That was his machshava, and that was his message that he gave the Chassam Kalb on the Duchok. I thought it was a really nice machshava. And so, women in general are better than men. Women are able to say, you're right, I'm wrong. Because they have much less ego issues than men do. Male ego is a reality. It starts about age 2 or so. I always said the word me is acronym for the word for male ego. That's what the me stands for, male ego. I'm having some issue with the mother, like 2 or 3 years old, you know, and my sister, what is this kid? I guess it's male ego. She said, what? He's telling us male ego. You know, 3 years old? Said, yeah, 3 years old. You know, can't admit he's wrong, you know. Out of same face, you know. Just say that you made a mistake. Well, I'm alive. You know? Can't do it. Men can't do it. Women are much better than that. So, for say, always have the guy will ask me, okay, you know, based on if I'm wrong, I should say, you're right, I'm wrong. What about what I do if I'm right? Right? And what he didn't say to me when he asked the question, per se, is you have to understand that at least in 70% of the time, he's right. Right? So I told him, even if you're right, there's nothing wrong with saying I'm sorry. That's number one. And even if you're right, you're still wrong for getting into a problem, making some type of a problem with it. Out of it. So you're still wrong. So you can't win. You're always wrong. Understand that. Which I wanted to share with you, which goes with this, and this one, and hold on a second. I'm still in my head as I was talking, and then I pull out again. This hanocha that you know, some people are always right. Some people are very good debaters. They're very good arguers, you know. So they can always be right even when they're wrong. But they sound like they're right. And they believe that they're right sometimes, which is even scarier. Because they were able to debate and argue to the point of that they're right. The musik of having an outside person to talk to, which you're both comfortable with, is a very imperative thing. There may be times where you're going to need to get some kind of outside input, and both of you are comfortable speaking to that person. When we got married, we made up that we're, you know, my Rebbe is going to be the person we're going to go to, and we have an issue we need to work out and how to decide something. We'll go to Rebbe. Now, obviously, that was a little bit of a lot of it tough on my wife's part because she was my Rebbe, you know. It paid off in a major way for my wife. I think I'd say approximately 50 times we went to my Rebbe to discuss an issue, you know, how to deal with something, or, you know, it wasn't always an issue of six, but, you know, we had different ways of approaching something. My wife was, Rebbe sided with my wife 50 times. so somebody one time asked him, like, why do you keep going back? He said, listen, hope is ever eternal, springs eternal in the hearts of men. You know, that maybe one time I'll win. You know, it's like, why do you do that? You know, like, just find a different rabbi or something, you know. So most of the government, my wife wasn't meeting and said, like, why do you try, Rebbe? You know what your Rebbe's going to say, like me anyway, you know? So maybe this time I would, you know? So that's mostly that you believe that you're going to go into the marriage, you know, with, a lot of times you're going to be right. I just want to warn you, if you come to me, I have the same answer I have for my Rebbe. I usually side with the wife.
You can't say who says what.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference who says what.
Oh, it's just ends up being that way.
Yeah. I mentioned to you way back, you know, women have a much better intuition of how the relationship is supposed to work than men. By nature, they're very, again, there's exceptions, the same, but women, we talk about the other women are relationship-oriented beings. And so, a lot of those issues, women will have a much better feel of how to deal with it than a man. I'm not saying it's always true. Again, you know, times where I feel that the woman is off target also. You know, I want to go back to one point. It's just put it into the, give you a muscle to put it in perspective. So now it's a very good muscle. I had a fellow in Cleveland that I worked with a lot, Bacher, Imam, and he had different issues, etc. And he became very dependent on me. Like, he wanted a very, very close, tight relationship with me. And at points, sometimes I felt it was stifling. It was like he wanted too much. I used to push him off a little bit. And he used to get very insulted. You know. This is a cycle which went on X amount of times. For sense, of course, we sat, like, he sat there and I sat here in Beit Medrash for davening and for learning. So it was like really, you know, like, you know, I could, like, we were in that type of way, I could feel the guy bristling when I would walk by. You could feel it. Like, ugh, you know, very uncomfortable. So one time I was talking with the Paulo Bote, he said, we were talking about getting involved in names, they were just talking about the idea of, he said, all relationship is good, and this thing just kind of, you know, he says, you know, we talked, it's a fucking, move into the world of investments. You look at investments, the wisdom of the stock market is that if you take any 10-year period, if you took a stock, assuming the stock didn't totally fold, you know, okay, if you take any stock, and you take any 10-year period from the year 1900 to the year 2000, 100-year period, take any 10-year period, the stock will gain money in value, including over the period of the Great Depression, when the stock market crashed. But if you measure it from day to day, it goes up and it goes down. You know, the language that I would interject into it, you shouldn't take your relationship temperature 3 times a day. A relationship is a long-term thing. The overall thing is this ups and this downs, but the overall thing is growth. You're moving towards a stronger connection, a better connection, etc. There's going to be dips. So you look at the stock market, and there'll be some very nice growth, there'll be a big down, there'll be some up a little bit, and then down a little bit, and up. But eventually, the overall trend is upward. Because if a person puts in a perspective of a total relationship as opposed to the specific detail, the relationship is very good. The specific details. Hello? Hello? Yeah, I'll be home soon. Okay. So, if you put it in that perspective, and some people, they have, like, you know, one person has a surgery, so they have the blood pressure, and it's attached, and it automatically puffs up like every 15 minutes to test it. Some people, that's how they do the relationship. the constant thing, is it doing good, is it doing bad, is it okay, you know, and they make a gansa to do, as you know, is the overall thing healthy? Yes, it's healthy. It's move out of life, you know. I have a deep dough, you have a deep dough, you work it out, you know. The person starts making into the person sees in a larger perspective, it makes it much easier to work with. Okay.